Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi there, I'm Brian Abana, and you're listening to the Mall Over Podcast.
Hello, good evening and welcome to this week's Mall Over Podcast, the only rugby podcast that brings all the news, views and opinion on the weekend's rugby action, all with a West Country accent. You can find us on Twitter, we are at Mall Over Podcast, Mall Over Rugby Podcast on Facebook, and you can find all of our podcasts on Anchor and Apple Pods and all other random podcatchers. We're back for 2022, and not only will we be able to be back for 2022, but we are also shortlisted for a Sports Podcast Award, which is quite exciting. So if you get 2 minutes, please go and vote for us. We've tweeted out several times already, so go and vote for us there. We're up against some pods I've never heard of, but also James Haskell's one. And
also, for God's sake, please vote for us so that one doesn't win.
And Hamilton and Goode and their, you know, independent podcast. In inverted commas, because
independent, fully studio based podcast with producer
funded and sponsored and all that other shit. I mean, it does make me laugh, the amount of podcasts that I hear. Oh yeah, well, we're completely independent, but you've got financial backing and, like you say, studio recorded access to all of the high-end people, you know.
Who gives a shit if people are independent or not? If you put out good content, listen to it. If you don't.
It's true.
Simples.
But we will loosely talk about rugby in one way, shape or form throughout the next hour or so. You've heard all of the people that are here. I'm Russ. We're joined by the housewife's favourite, Phil Elkins.
Hello, ladies.
Your farm vet. How are you doing?
Still going with that. Still going with hello, ladies.
Still going with hello, ladies. Someone who probably shouldn't go with hello, ladies, wearing a really fetching green sweater is Ben Eustace, nicest man in Cornish Rugby Podcasting. Hello, Ben.
Hello, nice people.
And the Lensman, Dougie Andrews. Welcome, Lensman. Welcome to 2022. Oh, was it?
Well, how much more of a greeting do you need?
I don't know, mate. I don't know, but...
Once more into the breach, dear podcast listeners.
Right, let's talk about... Should we talk about some rugby, or have you got any Christmas break-related news you want to get off your chest before we crack on? Anybody got any interesting stories from their Christmas and New Year?
Can we crack on, to be honest?
Yeah,
good. Other than the fact that... I went with the family to watch Exeter Bristol last weekend, and following listening to Rugby Rant to Banter multiple times, I now cannot say Harry Randall. I have to say Little Harry Randall Running with a Candle. So
which
much
is
so,
the correct way to pronounce his name.
So much so that my wife now says the same as well.
in her Scottish accent,
when
which
you,
I'm not going to try.
When you say it, do you envisage him in like an 1800s full length nightgown and one of those hats?
Wee Willy Winky.
And a pair of sandals, yes.
Yeah.
Harry Randall carrying a candle wearing sandals.
And Julie also said, you know, these rugby players are all bigger in real life. How big's that little one? That little one wearing nine? And I was like, yeah, about the same
about
size.
About dog as size.
About the same size as my 12-year-old son. Yeah.
I actually am taller than Harry Randall, just for the record.
He's got an unearthly big head, Harry Randall, as well. Have you noticed?
Here's a list of people who need to not mention the size of their heads. Russell Nilsson.
Yeah, but my head's proportionate. To me, Phil.
To the bottom of his head.
Harry Randall is like, he's a bit Frank Sidebottom, for those of you that get that reference. Anyway, right. Well, talking about little Harry Randall running with a candle, let's talk about Sale Bristol. Friday evening, an interesting game. Wayne Barnes doing his 250th Premiership game. Finally, now everyone can stop wanking.
250th. No one mentioned it.
I know. Yeah, I was going to say. Well, at least people can stop wanking on about it now. And for what it's worth, it was an absolutely terrible game, wasn't it, Ben?
Yeah, it was a shocker. Between people dropping high balls and people missing tackles, it was error-strewn. Is that a fair summary?
Error-strewn, I would say so. I mean, it didn't help just before kickoff with Sale losing Van Rensburg, which meant Dupreer had to come in at 13. And we all, you know, we talked about revolving door defenders for quite some time, but Jesus Christ, Sanderson must have been absolutely apoplectic when he missed his third or fourth tackle to allow Bristol to stroll in for two tries. You know, you think he looked to me, I put it in the group, he looks like he's ill. Like, he looks like he's weak. He looks like he's lost weight and he's just like really weak. He's been chained to a similar radiator as Adam Hastings.
Do you reckon there's some kind of inverse axis with rugby players where everybody else eats shitloads over Christmas and gets fat and he's just been on a starvation diet to make up for it?
Well, it's like he's clearly the runt of his family anyway.
Dan must like go to family gatherings and just spend the whole time totting whenever he sees him.
I can tell you what does happen. He goes out to the nightclub and starts all the aggro and the other two have to step in and bail him out.
Again.
Yeah.
That is 100% nailed on to be the case. Yeah. He starts all the scraps and you'll find him outside eating a bag of chips while his brothers are wading through piles of Mancunians.
After they've put them there, just decimating the whole of the Trafford Centre. I don't know whether he starts fights in the Trafford Centre, but I couldn't think of any
other places in Manchester.
So, Ben, you mentioned there that a lot of high balls, there was a lot of bouncing balls, weren't there? Like, Bristol back three really struggled, or they seemed to struggle against Sale's kicking game.
Yeah, I think both sides did to a degree, but Bristol did look like they didn't have a clue at times. And it's not the first time that's happened. Was it their first game of the season against Saracens? They were noticeably bad under the high ball as well.
Yeah. That was when everyone was really fixated on 50-22s, wasn't it? We just won 50-22.
Yeah, people were desperate for the first one, weren't they? But yeah, it really put Bristol in trouble and it nearly cost them certainly one try. And I think weren't both of those sort of disallowed tries off kicks? I know one wasn't a high ball, one was more a little chip, but you know they didn't gather them and they got very lucky on both occasions that a knock on was given.
Yeah.
I think me and Phil were talking about it, and the first one there was a knock on, but it would have been very much umpire's call if it had been in a cricket match. It was by the narrowest of margins.
If it was in a club game, there's no way a ref spots it. The ball brushes his finger and goes and carries on in its path. But when you've got a TMO who wants to be the centre of attention, they're going to pick that up.
I wanted to speak about TMOs. Maybe we'll do it in a little while.
Yeah,
I'm sick of them just inserting themselves into a game without invitation. And what that says to me, it's a lack of ability and a lack of confidence by the standing official.
I'm not going to comment on the TMOs quite frequently they're sat next to me.
No, and that's absolutely fine. But do you think
next time they sit next to you, can you take a roll of duct tape with you?
Yeah,
just a little bit over the mouth.
Just unplug the microphone. What I will say around this subject is Friday night they checked. So in fairness to Barnes, I don't know who the TMO was for Barnes on Friday night. Can anybody remember? Wayne Barnes referees his own game. They checked the tries because it was scoring and he wanted to check. And even he even asked for the check before he awarded the try. He didn't say on field as a try. There are certain other officials, and one of them was yesterday at the Stoop, who is by far the worst official in the Premiership at the moment, and has been for quite some time, Ian Tempest.
Tom Foley.
Foley was Friday night. And then Foley today, he was getting interjections. And the TMO should only speak when spoken to. I don't know how many times we've been down this rabbit hole, but the TMO should only talk or only speak when spoken to.
He did tell him to get lost today, didn't he, pretty much?
Yeah, it's just so infuriating. I don't want to fucking hear from you. If I want your advice, I'll ask for it. If I've missed something clear that is dangerous and foul play, fine. Otherwise, shut the twat up.
There was a bit today when somebody tackled Huha, and Huha made a genuine attempt to catch the ball and cocked it up.
Yeah, that was
got tackled at the same time.
Yeah,
and the ref was like, I just don't get it. What's your problem? What's the issue here? Why have you stopped the game to get me to look at something?
Yeah, it's absolute bollocks, and it's completely unnecessary. We'll come on to Tempest in a minute, but we'll finish off on the Bristol chat first.
Yeah, can I take you down a slightly different rabbit hole as a follow on? You had a conversation today with on Twitter, Russ, with Nix Johnson.
I did, yeah.
Who was suggesting that people should be cited so that they can look at incidents in the cold light of day and make a decision as to whether it should have deserved a red card. Now, for me, citings should only really be about things that carry a 3, 6, 12-week ban or something. If the ref spots it, deals with it at the time. Things either the ref hasn't spotted or seriously, we don't want this in the game kind of stuff, rather than I've got a dubious tackle, could it have been a red card? Leave that to the ref to sort out on the day. You don't need a citing commissioner to get involved in that kind of stuff. Ref's seen it, ref's looked at it, gone, I don't think there's an issue there. Move on, forget it.
Yeah, agree.
We've talked before about the sort of referral system they have in rugby league, haven't we? Where it's like the referee can go, I don't think it's that bad, but someone can have a look at it later.
Yeah.
I mean, I've said before, I think like a count back system. So, you know, they could sort of have like a referral. And then if you pick up, I don't know, three of those upheld in this season, you miss a game or something like that, rather than keep sending people off. I don't know if that would work better. But the problem is, like any law change in rugby, they soon find a way to take advantage of it. So whatever you bring in, someone will find an advantage for themselves from it somewhere, and then it'll be a waste of time. But yeah, they do need to wind the TMOs in a bit.
It just seems needless, and it's another way that's slowing down the game unnecessarily. But back to Sale Bristol. I mean, Bristol kept Sale scoreless in the second half, and like you mentioned, it was error strewn, Ben. There was that one bit of magic, should we say, right at the last, when Sale were trying to get themselves back into the game for a losing bonus point, and Uren and Lloyd combined for what was a lovely bit of play, really, and you know, a hell of an offload from Lloyd.
Yeah, he sort of came alive in the last 10 minutes, really. You know, he played well. But, you know, for the rest of the game, the Bristol back sort of flattered to deceive a little bit. And, you know, it wasn't until he sort of came alive. I think they probably improved when Uren came on, because I'm not sure Randall had his best game. His kicking isn't the best. And it was very much a night for kicking. And especially once Sale realised Bristol back three were going to drop everything, they really went for it. But, you know, I think Sale probably would feel hard done by because of the two disallowed tries. But I think Bristol were the better side. So if they'd lost, yeah, they'd probably have felt hard done by as well.
And Radrandra was quiet. I mean, he gave that offload back on the inside to Morahan, which Duncan Keane in the Twitter group mentioned. You know, do you think he got away with a potential forward pass because it was Radrandra, or were you sort of on the cusp of it being just flat? Let's crack on.
I thought it was all right. You've seen players get away with worse than that. Didn't have a lot of problem with that. Yeah, Morahan had two good finishes. You know, he did have a little bit of help from the revolving door for the first one, but. And I think, Phil, I think you said in the chat, didn't you, that whichever of the brothers it was at number eight had a very good game as well. Yeah.
Yeah, I like him. He's my kind of eight. You see these eights like, I suppose, Billy historically, Nathan Hughes is a bit of it as well, where they just want to run straight at people and take on that physical contact. And I just think Dan's a bit cleverer and a bit more wily than that. He'll run at people's shoulders. And yeah, you won't get such a big physical contact, but he'll make 4 or 5 extra yards every time he gets the ball. You see him and he's like pickups from eight and the flanker's on him and he's just keeps trundling forwards because he's got raw natural power and he's clever enough not to try and run over the top of people. No, I really like him. I think he's a great player. I think he's wasted at Sale.
I mean, looking at Sale's defence, and specifically, you know, Dupria's failings at 13. I know he doesn't play there often, but he should still be able to make your tackles. It was like they were always daring Bristol to go wide. They were really, yeah, they were really narrow, and they seem to be operating that, you know, we're going to rush you on the inside and we're going to dare you to go wide. And if you can get round the back, if you can get round there, we'll back ourselves to get across on a second wave. And it seems a very risky strategy when you've got centres that can't tackle properly.
and Marlon Yard wouldn't be renowned.
Is that a strategy?
Tackle either.
What a strategy. What? I mean,
Yeah.
I mean, I suppose you could say that you're trying to get Bristol kind of isolating themselves, making a break, and then Curry maybe there to come and get the ball. But
our strategy is to have a really soft belly.
Was it not potentially a case of, we know this chap can't tackle, therefore we're going to keep 12 and the winger a bit closer to him and allow the flankers to cover him behind him a bit easier? Because if we spread nice and wide, once they're through him, it's 2-on-1 against fullback.
Yeah,
we've all been in teams with somebody who can't tackle, and you shove a player as close as possible to them on either side.
That sounds like an analysis. Let's go with that.
Yeah. it's usually the 10.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move off of that. Then that was Brittle's first win in 4. Sale. Flattering to deceive a touch at the minute. They're in ninth. As I say, Bristol are still sort of languishing on 21 points now.
Before we move on,
go on, mate.
I'd be remiss if I didn't say how much I'm enjoying Pat Sanderson not being the second coming.
Alex Sanderson.
Alex Sanderson, yeah.
Well,
I think it is one of the most beautiful things that's ever happened in Premiership rugby.
I mean,
not making so many jokes on the touchlines now, are we, Alex? Okay. Not such a hoot now, are you, mate?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it was very systematic, Saracens. He was part of the Big Red Machine, wasn't he? That was always, you know, steamroller in teams. And
Pretty sure it was Eddie who was like, "Oh, maybe the reason that Saracens are so good isn't all of these great assistant coaches they've got who've gone to other clubs and look distinctly average. Maybe it's Mark McCall, or maybe it's Brendan Venter before."
We're still missing the point here. It was none of that.
No, it wasn't.
It was the fact that they had 25 to 30 full tier one international rugby players playing in the squad.
Yeah. Yep.
Because, correct me if I'm wrong, but they got beat by Gloucester, right?
Yes, they did, yeah.
They didn't get beat by Gloucester when they were cheating.
That's also true. That's also true. But we can come on to that. We'll come on to that now very quickly. So Gloucester with a last gasp victory. In the last 5 minutes, a penalty from Hastings was enough to beat Saracens despite a Lewington last second try. A conversion from Lazowski would have sealed a victory for Saracens, but he missed. But looking at that Saracens team, you know, Mako, who was yellow carded. It's, for me, when it's the bench. It's the bench where you see the biggest weaknesses in any team, because most first 15s in the Premiership are all pretty much as good as each other on their day. But where you see the big drop off now for Saracens is the bench. They're Wollstonecroft, Tompkins, Milasinovic, whoever he is, McFarland, never heard of him, Maui, never heard of him, Lewington, Hunter Hill and De Haas. I mean,
and when Saracens were dominating, and they did fairly well dominate, they were scoring a shedload of points in the last 20 minutes. There was a high number of games that it was touch and go at half time. They'd maybe pick up one try early on in the second half, and then they'd score 20, 30 points in the last 20 minutes. And you're right, they don't have that strength and depth in the bench coming through. But equally, I don't think their first team's as intimidating as it was when they had Liam Williams and Cruz and Will Skelton and various other people.
You can say it, Phil, when they were cheating.
Yes, okay. When they were cheating. No, I don't think their first team's as good as it was when they were caught cheating.
Shock.
No.
Absolute shock. Who knew that Football Manager was harder when you didn't go into the editor and put all the best players on your team and give yourself £1 billion?
In a previous pod, Russ has suggested downloading Champ Mano 0102. Try playing that with Southampton, because nobody comes to you. Doesn't matter how much money you've got.
Try playing it with Southampton, but you just put all the best players on your team.
But it doesn't matter how much money you've got. No, all of the players refuse to come and play.
Nah, not having that. I've been
to the editor and you put your team's reputation up to 100. It's easy. Yeah.
Or the other way I've done it is Doug, I'm not a cheat.
I've
cheated on numerous occasions. Just go and manage Man United and buy a really shit youth team reserve goalkeeper for 50 million. There you go. That'll sort your coffers out. Retire from management.
But yeah, the flip side of that is, I said it pre-Christmas sometime, I think Gloucester are playing really well and are looking like a decent side. And I think I know it's easy to say with the table looking the way it is. I think the top three will end up being the top three, and it's between Gloucester and Northampton for who's going to get that fourth spot. I really like Geordie Reid. I think he's an abrasive little irritant. Obviously, Ludlam's a machine, tackling-wise. They've got a decent back line there. Hastings seems to be pulling the right strings where whoever else they've had at 10 historically hasn't been able to.
He's really turned it around there, Skivington, hasn't he?
And yeah, without whole-scale staff changes.
Yeah, or without
player changes.
Big name, you know, he's kept the squad together and he's developed it. And you think, okay, you know, with, Don Walduck. He's got Don Walduck as the backs and defensive coach, I believe. Yeah. And he's done a great job. So, you know.
And actually seen a little bit of Jack Singleton in the last month or so, which kind of, yeah, something where you go, you're not just a bang average hooker who's got picked because you're available. Now, I'm not saying he deserves to have won all the caps that he has won, but there's a bit of something there.
You'd probably say
that's just Gloucester. What I look for in my England hooker. Sorry,
exactly. A bit of something. Yeah.
A bit of something. Yeah.
You'd probably say that Gloucester from the back row outwards, so the backs in the back row, are probably stronger than Saracens on paper. Just the teams that were put out on Saturday. You'd say Reed as a six was probably more mobile than Ezekwe. Ludlow and Earl, probably fairly level. And then Ackerman, without Billy in that team, he's the best number eight on the pitch. And then you've got two Scottish internationals, a Welsh international, and two England internationals in Gloucester's backs as well. So at the moment, they've not got a bad starting 15.
Chris, Atkinson and Harris are your atypical rock solid Premiership centre partnership, aren't they? I know Harris is a Scotland international and a Lion. Mark Atkinson is one of the most consistent performers in the Premiership for the last 3 or 4 years, really, when he's been fit. And they've got that. They've got strength. They've got a bit of flair without being too flamboyant, but they get it done. And they're very, very good in defence as well.
Yeah, it's quite an old-fashioned centre pairing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Both good in defence. One's a big unit. The other one's pretty tough. Sort of defends that outside channel. And then you've got... Rhys Sammet was on the bench, but you've got Rhys Sammet and May, which is real wheels, isn't it? So, you know, Gloucester, they're one of those teams, I think, you know, a couple of injuries, suddenly that team doesn't look quite so impressive. But at the moment, you know, the results are showing that's a pretty handy starting 15.
Yeah, definitely. And they're trending in the right direction. So, and they're up to fourth, right? Like Gloucester, we're halfway through the season. And Gloucester in fourth with 38 points. So, you know, they're not far away. I mean, Exeter in sixth with 33. Northampton 35, Gloucester 38, Quins 42, Saracens 43, and Tigers 51. So, I mean, there's still plenty to play for. I mentioned Exeter there. I sat and watched this game yesterday afternoon, fully expecting it to be an absolute cracker, and it absolutely was. The polar opposite of the Premiership final, where it was all hands, tries. And this was one of the most hard-fought games that I've watched for quite some time. Exeter, in the first 20-25 minutes, completely outplayed by Harlequins. That early try from Northmore, who seems to be improving all the time. And Exeter couldn't get out. They kept making mistakes. They gave away silly penalties. They kept knocking the ball on. And every time they looked like they were going to get out of their own territory, they'd make a mistake or Quins would just bosh them back. And they just had the spell. Exeter just had a spell at the end of that first half from about 25, 26 minutes to just about the half until the incident that we'll come on to. Where they just started to play. You know, they just you know, the way that Exeter do, they just sort of turn the screw and you just thought, oh, here we go. They've sucked in all of this pressure. They'd only conceded 7 points. And then before you knew it, it was 7-7. And you're like, how the fuck have Exeter done that? And it was a real, like, belligerent, almost a masterstroke. It's like, how have they managed to soak up all this pressure? And then obviously came the sending off. And there's been a lot of chat about it all over Twitter, as you'd imagine. Oh, Simmons needs to be banned as well. Oh, this. Oh, Hepburn this. Oh, Hepburn that. Double red cards. And all these people shouting for double red cards clearly didn't see the incident. I mean, assuming you've both seen the incident now.
Yeah. It's fairly straightforward to me, to be honest. I don't really want to spend any more time talking about it than we have to. Simmons is making a clear out on Joe Marler, and Hepburn comes in as a second person to make that clear out and clearly lifts half of Marler because a chunk of his weight's being held by Simmons, tips him directly upside down and drops him. It's a fairly straightforward red card. He'll get a ban for it. Simmons was in the act of doing a perfectly legal
clear out. That's right. Yeah. People say, oh, well, you know, I've seen people really angry about this on Twitter. Well,
those people need to get a life.
Yeah. I had a conversation with a couple of people today, Nick Johnson, who's been on the pod. And we all reached the conclusion that Simmons, by the letter of the law, didn't actually do anything wrong. And Hepburn, you know, do you think that there's an element of Hepburn almost a lesser of two evils? Because had he kept hold of him, the only other thing that could have happened was he would have looked like he'd actually pile drive his head into the floor. Do you think him letting go was a reaction to go, actually, I need to let him go, otherwise it's going to look a hell of a lot worse?
I think it was a case of he'd lifted him up and I think it was almost disregard. He lifted him up and chucked and just dropped him and said, I'm done with him. Move on. And rather than him, I don't think at any point, and I could be wrong, and I've met Alec Hepburn a couple of times. He seems like a really nice chap, but we all know what happens when we cross the whitewash. I don't think at any point did he think, I've lifted him over the horizontal. I've got to try and find a way to get out of this. I think he just went, screw you, Marler.
That Joe Marler had been getting in his head.
It's great to see that Marler got straight back up, didn't really moan and whinge about it. Obviously, clearly wasn't hurt.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's a red card. We've seen red cards like this for the last few years. It's been spotted. He's been carded. The game moves on. There was on the Twitter group chat, there was a bit of conversation. It was all finished by the end of halftime and get back on with the rest of the game.
Yeah.
But moving back to your original point, Russ, I've been saying it all season and probably most of last season that Exeter's game that got them the double was based on 100% execution of core skills and a fairly straightforward game plan. There's some creativity, mainly around Slade, and then you bring in Hogg and Noel as well that can add, and O'Flaherty, you can add an extra level of creativity there. But the basis of it was execution of core skills. And having been at the Bristol game, they were fantastic and back to nearly their best. But when you only do 90% execution of those core skills, they scraped a win that they should have thrashed Bristol with the amount of possession and territory that they had. And 2 years ago, they would have had a bonus point by half time. And then what happened on Saturday was they were at 80-85% execution of those skills for much of the game, which is why they ended up losing it. And it's been happening, as I say, for the last 2 years, that they just haven't hit that reliable precision with the jobs that they do.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the answer to that is. I'm sure part of it's personnel. They look a lot better with Dave Ewers playing than the games at the start of the season when he wasn't playing, because his pick and goes around the corner are like an elephant picking and going at you. I think they miss Vermeulen.
They really do.
Because he's an absolute animal. I'm not convinced by the Hill-Grey combination in the second row. I don't think they've actually got their second row right for a couple of seasons.
Do you think they're a bit similar, Phil?
Yeah. I think they're too alike in the way that they play. And they're both very good at what they do. They're both workhorses, but I just think you need something that's a bit different, either something that's a bit more mobile. I think they look better when they have Hill and Simmons in Hill and Skinner in second row, and obviously both of those are going at the end of the season, than when they have Hill and Gray. I think it just, the balance is a bit better. Like Sam Simmons in the Bristol game, he was all over the park, literally all over the park, like an absolute animal. And then on Saturday, I thought he was a bit quiet. It's one of those things where when everything clicks and everybody's playing at 100%, they look like the best team in the world and they make rugby look easy. But all it takes is that to slip a little bit and all of a sudden they look very beatable every game.
And that's the thing, isn't it? When you do basic things very, very well, right, it kind of, it's construed as boring and you know, lack of flair and all that sort of stuff. But you have a game plan, you stick to it. Saras has did it for a long time. Exeter had their way of playing for a long time. When you have a simple game plan that doesn't necessarily rely on flair and individual brilliance, and those levels drop, it's very, very noticeable.
Yeah, and I'd say that their game plan in most respects is the most basic of the basic. And to put that into context, in the game today that I'm sure we'll come to in a bit, when Genge was offered the yellow card, George Ford did a fantastic job of managing that clock by going to a multitude of different kicking options, but they're all either contestable or they were really good territory gaining kicks that they knew the ball was going to come back to them, and he can take his time and he can pick a different kicking option to move it around. You wouldn't see Exeter doing that. They would stick with their consistent game plan.
Yeah.
Of take it up four or five times. If we're not making the yards, we'll box kick it. If we start making the yards, then actually we'll start bringing the backs in because we know we've sucked people in and there's a gap.
Which they have done, which they did last week with Noel. For a try last week when he kicked through. Or was that yesterday? God, am I mixing my days up?
No, it was Noel's little nudge off his outside boot for O'Flaherty to score against Bristol.
That's it. And they did that off first phase. And they can do, and Exeter can do that, but they can't do it all the time because that's where they soften teams up and they create those gaps. Yesterday, they defended unbelievably for 60 minutes of that game, because they probably only had the ball for 15 of it. So, 60, 65 minutes, they defended doggedly. And when they got back into it, it was a good try from Slade, a couple of kicks to the corner, a couple of roundabouts. I mean, Jack Maunder has been struggling the last couple of weeks. I think his brother has looked better when he's come on. Yeah. But yesterday he was dropping balls at the back of rucks and putting himself under pressure. And then, yes, the conditions were tricky, but he was making a lot of individual errors. The Slade, Noel, Hogg axis is looking probably as good as it's ever done when they actually get the opportunity. But when they scored that try in the second half, after all of their defence, it was so stereotypical Exeter, where they went bang, line out, penalty, line out, penalty, line out, line out,
try. It was like metronomic Exeter. They just went bang, bang, force a mistake, bang, force a mistake, bang, try. And they did everything to keep Harlequins out. But Marcus Smith, I mean, I cannot. Marcus Smith, Alex Donbrandt, and Esther Hazen are phenomenal.
Yeah.
Phenomenal. And you know, Kerr is playing well and is facilitating their excellence by allowing Donbrandt to have the ball, by getting Smith quick ball. But Smith and Esther Hazen, they're world class. They're different class to anything in the Premiership at the moment. Ben will chuckle. I'm going to put George Ford with him because I think Ford has been fantastic for Leicester this season and is still right up there and shouldn't be forgotten about when it comes to English fly halves. But Esther Hazen and Smith with Donbrandt making those meters. And he acts such a big decoy for them to allow the likes of Green, Northmore, Liner, Murley, whoever it is they've got in the back three, to do what they do. Now, well, they didn't click yesterday, that back three, at all, really. And it was Esther Hazen that did all the damage. But Ben, you were going to come in?
Well, I was just going to say, sort of, when we were talking about simple game plans, I don't think many successful teams do have a complicated game plan. And, you know, you say about attacking off first phase, but, you know, as you said, Exeter are capable of doing it, and a lot of teams are capable of doing it, but they're not going to do it every time because it becomes predictable. Whereas that try that you were just talking about with Noel's kick was, you know, it was something a bit different that caught, you know, that caught a team unawares, and they put the ground rules down for it. So, you know, Exeter got a simple game plan that involves possession and wearing teams down. The successful Saracen side's taking the money out of it. Their game plan was pretty simple. They just sort of enveloped you in defence and beat hell out of you, basically, with their ball carriers, which gave them then the opportunity to score tries late, as Phil mentioned. And Quins, for all the the exciting runners they've got, an old-fashioned straight-running 12, who, as you say, fixes the defence. And they've got a big, smart ball carrier 8, who is always going to make ground. So, you know, even with all the bells and whistles and the two great halfbacks, they're effectively using big ball carriers. And I wonder if part of Exeter's problem at the moment is if you take Ewers out of there, they don't have a lot that's going to just batter through a defence. You haven't got Cowan Dickey in there. You know, Simmons is a great runner, but he isn't going to knock...
So Cowan Dickey, Devoto at 12.
Yeah.
I also think they're massively missing Harry Williams at tight head, and they're struggling in the set piece as a result. And Vermeulen as well will run hard at people.
Yeah. You know, and as you say,
Vermeulen will be back during the Six Nations sometime.
Yeah, I as you say about Gray and Hill, neither of them are huge runners. Like Hill gets around and makes some ground through his, you know, really good support play, and Gray just carries a lot, but they're not sort of Brodie Retallick style or Exeter style sort of, you know, what would be the word, you know, a bit more dynamic. So maybe that's Exeter's problem at the moment. They're going to be in it, you know, they're still going to be up there at the end of the season, though.
Yeah, you'd absolutely think so. And the last try, I mean, the stones from Smith, he's seen Esther Hazen wide again. Like, Esther Hazen was in that wide channel when everyone was expecting him to be ready to smash it up through the middle. And then for Smith to land that conversion from basically the touchline in horrific conditions was just, it was different class. And he's phenomenal. And he needs to be just given of rain to go for England, and we'll see what happens. Doug, you disagree with that?
Well, no, I was just shaking my head because I nearly dispatched my computer out of the window.
fair enough. Doug, you were at Newcastle yesterday for Newcastle versus Saints. Anything to report from Kingston Park?
Newcastle weren't very good.
Okay. Care to elaborate on that?
Considering everything we say again about Saints, they just let Saints do what they wanted, basically, and sort of tight first 25 minutes, and then there was a breakaway try, and in the second half, Newcastle just rolled over and had their balls tickled, basically. It was a little bit one-way traffic, which is surprising for a Saints side going up to Newcastle, really. Like they tend to not travel very well, but again, you can't read too much into it because Saints could come out next week and be absolutely horrendous. So, you know, what are we doing here?
What, any of us?
Yeah,
fair enough.
They're Tottenham.
Northampton Saints are Tottenham.
Yeah, they're good enough to be in games, but they're never good enough to win the big ones.
Yeah.
I think that's Saints in a nutshell, basically.
Just to go back a second, and then we'll talk about Saints because I think there's a bit more positivity than Doug's giving them. Back on the Exeter Chiefs thing, I was just trying to think who was the second rows when they won the Premiership the first time round. That were the hard ball carrying second rows. It was Dave Dennis,
Mitch Lees.
Mitch Lees was there as well. For me, Dave Dennis was the player that they're missing in that second row. But yeah, no, I think there's a lot more positivity about Saints. I just think they are. There's a big question mark over what happens with Chris after Chris Boyd because he wants to go back home to New Zealand.
Because he's found the Premiership too hard.
Well, potentially. But there's a lot of positivity around that squad that's just going to take a bit of time and maturity. There's still a really young back line there. How long's Bigger contracted for?
2 more years, I think.
Okay, so Bigger for 2 more years with the rest of the back line maturing and learning and growing, I think there's a really good team there for the future. And yes, they will every so often throw in a loss to Worcester. They'll probably get turned over by Bath when they play them next. But
oh, well, that's nailed on.
But, there's a lot more positivity about that squad than there was a year ago.
Yeah. You mentioned Bath there. Ben, Bath are no longer winless after being off today.
Off and running. Walloped the mighty 14 men of Worcester by 2 points, 3 points. It's getting better by the minute, isn't it? I mean, it's nice to get a win. It's nothing to get too excited about. Franco in our Twitter chat has posted the next 5 fixtures for Bath, which look frankly horrendous. Leinster, La Rochelle?
La Rochelle, Saracens, Leinster, Quins, Saracens, Wasps, yeah.
Yeah, so... if they get 2 wins out of that, then it might be something to get excited about. But I won't hold my breath. It can't do any harm, can it? You know, sometimes one win leads to another. I think they shouldn't be bottom on paper, but they're definitely bottom on grass. So any confidence boost will be very welcome.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you see those headlines on BBC Sport or whatever that so-and-so beat 10-man whatever. Sort of Spurs failed to beat 10-man Southampton, as happened a couple of weeks ago. And then you look at it and you see that the red card was like in the 83rd minute or something. Mm. And you go, well, that's not really the case. Sixth minute to lose a player in the sixth minute.
And I think wasn't the sixth minute partially due to how long they took to talk over it?
I'll be honest, I haven't seen the game or the highlights.
The report I said the incident happened after 75 seconds.
Well, so yeah, the Worcester loosehead got sent off after 6 minutes. The Bath tighthead got substituted after 2 minutes. So I'm wondering whether that was part of the same incident. That was the
accident, yeah. Yeah, he made contact with the head of Will Stewart. So,
and you've beaten the mighty Worcester with their scrum of Sutherland, who got sent off, Annett, Judge, Batley, Kitchener, Hatherall, Hill, and Kvesic. Wow, that's a scary looking front eight, isn't it?
Hey, a win's a win for Bath. Let's not go overboard.
It is, but yeah.
Phil, you've really punctured my overconfidence now, mate.
Sorry, Ben. I don't know. Does that win? What was it? Was it not 4 games ago that they said, or was that just Franco making some stuff up, saying that they're going to give Stuart Hooper 4 games to decide whether he keeps his job or not, and this was the fourth of them. And it's almost like, I don't know. Do they want to have won that, or do they want to clear house and start again?
Put it this way: no one is going to want to take the job in the next 5 weeks.
No.
Yeah, they may as well leave it as is. The other game today was Leicester going down at Wasps.
On Wasps.
Going down on what? I mean, that would be a tantalising affair, wouldn't it?
Indeed.
An early yellow card for Tommy Reffel. I didn't see most of this game, unfortunately. I don't know if any of you guys watched more of it than I did. I turned it on for the last 10 minutes, just as Wasps slotted a penalty to go 16-13 up. Leicester went all the way down the other side of the pitch, had about 3 or 4 scrums where they marmalised Wasps. And then I walked out the room, come back at full time, and they'd still lost. And I couldn't quite work out how. Phil, are you able to shed any light?
Yeah, I was ripping a wall down whilst watching the first half, so I didn't necessarily, I wasn't that close to watching it. Phil?
It's the housewife's favourite.
And a crowbar.
Naked from the waist up. Ripping walls down with your hands.
Down, naked from the waist down, I was.
And he wasn't using a hammer.
I can hear Spank snapping at the sound of that, at the thought of that.
But I watched most of the second half, and Leicester weren't clicking by any shape of the imagination. They were really struggling to make it work. But equally, it was a bit like Friday in that there was quite a lot of it that just was a bit error-strewn. Atkinson, the young Wasps fly half, absolutely shanking a clearance kick off his shin, but luckily
Hey, don't worry about that, mate. Don't worry about that, Charlie.
It was worse than that, wasn't it, Phil? He was trying to do a cross kick in his own 22 and managed to kick it backwards. Was that is that a different one?
That was a different one. This one, he was trying to put it into touch and it went straight down the middle of the pitch.
That one as well, yeah.
But when it went 60 yards, unlike your shanks, Russ. but yeah, Leicester just looked really formulaic and one-dimensional for the last half an hour or so. They just looked like they were devoid of much in the way of ideas. And having said that Ford really managed that that yellow card period well, which he did, he managed the clock there fantastically. There wasn't really much in the way of cutting edge. I mean, there was a nice little cross kick from Ford to Muramirivalu, who caught the ball and then seemed to
forget what sport he was playing. Just like, yeah, I've got it, I've won. Oh no, I've got to do something more here. He looked really useless when he came on. Looked like he hadn't run with the ball in his hands ever before. It was like under sevens. I'm not gonna pick on him as much as Duncan might think that I was going to. Ben Youngs, he passes the ball, he then kind of walks over watching it, admiring it, and then waits for the tackle to be made and then goes, shit, I've got to be there, and sprints across. So they're always waiting for him to get there off second, third, fourth phase ball when you get a bit of go forwards, and it just kind of breaks the speed down completely. But it wasn't their day. They weren't really at the races. Wasps were pretty poor as well. Now, was it that the conditions were particularly bad? If you judge by the fullbacks, they must have been terrible, because neither fullback had a particularly good day. Stuart missed a nobbed a couple of balls. One he tried to stop, and I don't know whether he nutmegged himself or it went off his shin or something into touch from a hoo-ha kick through. He put a kick through. I think he was looking for territory and just stuck it straight down 15's throat with loads of space. But then their 15 kept dropping the ball that was straight towards him. It was just, yeah, it was what you would expect from level 8 kind of rugby.
I'm obviously going to stick up for Stuart. The one that went through his legs was an absolute pig. That was so hard to feel. I don't think anyone would have.
It was moderately bad.
It was really travelling. But yeah, I mean, poor old Crossdale at 15 for Wasps was really struggling, wasn't he? And yeah. I think Stewart was probably symptomatic of Leicester in that they were all just a bit, meh. And it was almost like they got so much confidence from all these wins that they just got to the point where they were like, if we just carry on doing what we've been doing, we're going to win. And it actually nearly worked. But Wasps did up their game from the second half, and they looked better when Porter came on at scrum half. Because, you know, for any criticism of Youngs, Porter definitely wasn't slow at getting to the ball and getting it off the floor. I thought Barbary started to come into the game in the second half as well. Yeah. He started to look dangerous. And for all the criticism he got a few years ago, I think Shields is a really good player as well.
He's a fantastic, I think he's a fantastic Premiership.
Yeah. I just think he was mishandled and mismanaged for England. I think they were asking him to do a job that he isn't there to do. But I mean, Christ, if I was playing back row, I'd be more than happy to have Brad Shields on the other side with me.
Yeah, especially for Nuki Seconds.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But Barbary is a really interesting one, because there's still people, despite the fact that he's, I don't know how much rugby he's played this year, but minimal, wanking him off as being the next best thing. But like, he's good. That's as far as it goes, as far as I'm concerned at the moment.
Yeah,
he needs to play a season and a half of Premiership rugby before he's going to be anything more than good.
Yeah, and he's not standing out like he was when he first came through. You know, whether that's just he's not quite back from his injury yet, or it was just a sort of a novelty.
There's
factor.
A catalogue of people who have come through and had a couple of really good games and people start raving about it, who turn out to be quite average. People were raving about Ogre when he first came in. And to me, he's a decent Premiership player.
I think we need to work out what position he's going to play as well. I mean, he did a pretty decent job at six, but he's built maybe more like a front row forward, maybe.
I think it's probably, if he's got serious England aspirations, I think there's more opportunity at hooker. Because
I mean,
behind George and Karen Dickey, there isn't a lot.
Mm. But, you know, if he is going to come through there, he's definitely going to have to get a lot of games under his belt. It wasn't a great game in the same way that the Bristol game wasn't a great game. but it had a fairly exciting ending, which always sort of leaves you with a sort of more positive view of a game. And, you know, Wasps did well to hold on, and then your mate, the substitute, who I'm not even going to try and pronounce his name,
Murray.
Sort of old Murray sort of fittingly dropped the ball, didn't he? I mean, Leicester are sort of on the bare bones a little bit. You know, Dolly came on in the back row. And, you know, they had a couple of yellow cards as well. So, you know, I probably just have to put that down as a bad day at the office. And
I thought their hooker played really well. His name, I can't remember.
Yeah, he did. He put in some... Well, he was leading the tackle count by about double at one stage from both sides. Montoya. Yeah, I was going to say that, and I thought I was going to get grief for it.
The only other thing I was going to say is the bit that Russ did see. Leicester had a scrum 5 metres out, absolutely crucified the Wasp scrum, penalty. And I thought at the first one he could have given a penalty try. Had another scrum, absolutely crucified them, penalty. And at that stage, I thought easily he could have given a penalty try. Ben Youngs gets the ball right in front of where the referee is saying penalty, taps and dives over the line. And the ref's like, oh, no, I can't. And I just thought, actually, you know what? Let's not be anal about a yard or so from where the mark is that he hasn't actually made. He's taking it quick in front of the ref.
When a scrum...
As a nine, you can't do much more than that.
When a scrum is folded like that, the penalty could be anywhere from in the sort of 8 metres that the scrum had sort of collapsed backwards, couldn't it, you think? Yeah. So if...
And I'm not saying I think Leicester deserve to win, but I mean that 9 times out of 10 they'd have scored a try there, either from a penalty try or from the tap and go.
I thought Leicester was shit.
Yeah, wasn't that what I said? Yeah. They were one-dimensional and flat.
Yeah, I can't believe they've won 11 games this season. It's three phases and a kick. It's England. It's England 2 years ago. It's dull, one-dimensional, boring rugby. And I think potentially they might start to be found out a little bit from here on.
So I put, before the game, I put on the Twitter group chat that I really wanted Leicester to win. And I'm disappointed nobody asked me why. And the reason I wanted them to win is I poetic comedy of seeing a team potentially going the entire season unbeaten to lose to Gloucester in the semi-finals.
Like it. Right, any more on the Premiership? Any more Premiership chat before we move on? Roger that. Right. Very, very quickly, one last subject I just want to touch on is the sweet, sweet irony that Wales and Scotland might have to play their Six Nations games in England so they can have a fan base. I mean, the Welsh, without getting too political, the Welsh First Minister is basically got one foot in the grave anyway. And still trying to keep crowds out of grounds is going to seriously damage any Welsh or Scottish Six Nations hopes. I mean, let's be honest, France are going to murder everyone. But, you know, it would be lovely if Wales and Scotland had to play their home games in England, wouldn't it?
I read some bullshit that if Wales play to empty stadiums, it's gonna ruin their finances of the entire country, not just the WRU, for the next 6 months. Shows you how much beer they drink, doesn't it?
Absolute fuckers. Makes you laugh though. I mean, where would they play it? Where could they play it? Would they play at Ashton Gate? That's only 20,000.
In the park. Wales's fan base is South Wales predominantly. So, I mean, Birmingham logical as anywhere. They'd want somewhere 40,000 plus, really, wouldn't they? How big is the park?
Ben? I just assume they play at Wembley.
Yeah,
that's where they played back in the '90s, wasn't it? When they were
redeveloping
Cardiff. Yeah, and you know, I mean, they get everywhere, don't they? So I don't think they'd have any trouble filling up Wembley. You know, there's probably enough Welsh people in London, but you know, it's straight line down the M4, isn't it?
It would make sense. Couple of hours on the M4. Where are you going?
I'll tell you who'd be loving this chat, and that's the ticket resellers. Because those tickets are going to come out last minute. People are going to snap them up and then go, actually, shit, I can't make it. And the resale sites are going to make a killing off it.
Yeah, that's true. Right. Any other business? Doug, I think, has finally thrown his laptop out the window.
I know, he's coming back in.
He's coming back.
As an alter ego.
Is he? Okay.
I can do some any other business quickly. I'm assuming one of you will talk about our fantastic victorious draw today. So I'm not going to talk about that. I want to talk about the hot topic of the year, which is the zigzag lines outside of school. I've turned into a vigilante now. I've started knocking on people's windows when they're parked on the yellow line that says school.
Tracy told me not to.
And then going up to the headmistress and the caretaker and going, you know, there's cars parked on that wiggly yellow line again, and just keep hassling them. But yeah, I got told politely to fuck off on Friday.
Nice.
in front of three kids from some woman who pulled up in her Landy, opened the doors, was kicking the kids out. And I was like, do these yellow lines not apply to you? Is it because you're in a Lander? Do you think you're more important than the rest of us? To which the response was, fuck off. But yeah, just it's the height. Well, when I went to pick Charlie up on Friday after school, school kicks out at 3:15. I was well early. I got there at about 3:00, and there were three cars already parked on the zigzags. So they've turned up 15 minutes early and still can't be asked to walk the extra 20 yards. It's just the height of laziness. But
you need to get get the police guy back there and start monitoring it again.
Exactly. But yeah, that was all I had.
Cool. Ben, anything from you?
There's no Claude on The Apprentice.
Oh, mate.
Is The Apprentice still going?
Mate.
Yeah, started on Thursday.
Of all of the opening episodes of The Apprentice I've ever watched, right? Again, every series seems to get more and more shambolic. And, I mean, it makes you wonder where they find these people. It's fucking mental. And
that guy's, you could see that guy's heartbreak when the focus group described his logo as looking like a turd.
it was so bad. But you know, it's insane. And whenever they go to pitch, like, and it's always a person goes, I haven't really got any pitching experience, but I'm the project leader and I really believe in this and I really think I can do it. And I just think, just leave it to somebody who can do it. What are you doing? They just never learn. They never ever learn.
They want to make a impact early, don't they, and goes badly wrong. Anyway, it was quite an entertaining episode, but apparently Claude had an accident, so he's been replaced for a series.
He had an accident, didn't he? What the accident?
Yeah, he hurt himself.
Accident. Fell off Amstrad Towers.
Yeah.
Just going to Google it. What was he doing on the roof?
Doug, anything from you? No, there isn't. is he frozen? He's back as Wabi TV.
I think it's just a picture.
Yeah, it's just a picture. I can't hear him.
Jesus fucking wept. That was a mission.
Right, and he's come in. Just as we get into any other business, he's now come in with his microphone so he could turn it all off again.
Jesus, can you actually hear me?
We could hear you all the time. Now we can hear you even better.
Oh, God almighty.
There you go. God, what's your any other business, mate?
Any other bit? Oh, I can't even remember now. Come back to me.
Well, I've got to do me. Go on, tell us about Claude, Ben.
He had a cycling accident.
Yeah, did he?
What was he cycling on the roof for?
Yeah. He was riding an electric bike and he's had to have 9 surgeries to date.
Oh, wow.
On his right leg. Yeah. So, yeah. Poor old Claude.
Poor old Claude.
Yeah.
Anyway, Doug.
Moaning golf course people, just stop moaning. It's pissed it down for 3 months. Like, close the course for a week and let's just, you know, actually have a golf course to play on in May.
Oh, have you got moany golf course people? That's what happens when you play a Parkland course.
It's not a Parkland, mate.
What is it then?
It's on the side of a hill. It's not a Parkland course at all.
Well, still wet.
Well, it doesn't get wet. That's the thing. It's just rained so much that it has got wet.
So, therefore, it's got wet.
Yeah. Just, you know, stop whinging about fucking everything.
Yeah. I mean, I played Trevose the other day. Did I tell you that?
Yeah, you did. Yeah. That was one we were going to play before the Mall Over Invitational that you forgot about, right?
Well, I didn't forget.
But you did forget.
Okay. I don't really have any other business today. I mean, I could talk about, as Phil suggested, England finally pulling out a draw in the Ashes. But I refuse to celebrate that level of mediocrity. I just think that it got down to the final ball. We were 9 wickets down and like that sort of shit shouldn't be celebrated.
Rescuing a jaw from the jaws of an arsing.
Yeah, but
still haven't made 300 this tour, have we?
Still haven't made 300. The players
cumulatively.
Players are dropping like flies. I would just fucking almost start again now. Get Pope and Lawrence and Billings in.
I wouldn't. I'd just go home.
Yeah, just claim COVID and banish the fit test.
Just do an India and go home.
Yeah.
Well, we've got the batting version of Stuart Broad now, haven't we, in Johnny Bairstow?
Yeah. Every time he's looking like he's going to be back out the side, he get some runs or wickets.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see what happens with Bairstow. I can see Billings coming in. Can see, you know, it'd be good to see Lawrence. You know, they'll bowl Anderson again into the ground. Broad, they'll probably bring Wokes back in. Who knows what they'll do in Hobart for a pink ball test, but the management is shambolic anyway. Chris Silverwood is so far out of his depth. He's below Peter Moores when it comes to international coaching and management. So there you go. Right. I think that's about it. Anything else from any of you gentlemen?
Saracens women beat Darlington Roden Park 104-0 today in the Tyrrells Premiership.
They did, didn't they? That can't be good. I mean, that was probably at home. Those ladies have travelled from Durham, probably. I don't know whether they would have hopefully have travelled down yesterday, stayed overnight. But that's a fucking long way to go to get an absolute ass in, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
And makes you wonder what sort of support they're getting when all the other lady sides, Loughborough, I think they're joining forces with Northampton, are they? They're doing a double header, is that right?
I believe so.
Exeter have got their team, Saracens, Bristol, Gloucester, Hartbury, and then the poor ladies from Durham. And, you know, you think that the Newcastle Falcons or whatever would get behind them and see what happened, you know, but clearly they're not interested. So there you go. Nice and positive way to end the podcast. European rugby is back next week. So yes, there is a likelihood that we'll be back next Monday with a punch in chat. We'll get hold of Adam and we'll get some questions. And if we may even extend the invitation to a lucky listener, if you want to come on and be part of Punch in Chat, please hashtag this episode with I want to punching chat
and a funny second hashtag
of your choosing.
They won't have any characters left with that hashtag. Hashtag punch me.
So yes, I like that. Okay, so hashtag punch me and then another hashtag of your choosing. And one of
Hashtag punch me or hashtag punch Ben?
Either. They can have either.
Hashtag punch me. It's easier to search this one. Hashtag punch me. Anyway, right. We'll speak to you all next week. Go well.
Podcast Network.